Hello and welcome to the Cognitive Engineering Podcast, produced by me, Fraser McGrewer, for Aleph. In this series of podcasts, we take a look at interesting topics and discuss what we think they tell us about analysis and decision-making. I'm here with Peter Coghill and Nick Hare of Aleph, and this week we're discussing the line between genius and madness. Nick, kick us off.
Have you heard tell of Kathy Mitchell?
Nope.
She's a lady who appears on telly. She's American.
Okay.
She usually pushing some kind of weird kitchen gadget, which, you know, slices courgettes or chops eggs or something.
Okay.
She wrote a book called Eat This Book, right?
Okay.
And how it works is each recipe is printed on greaseproof paper. And what you do is you take that slice of greaseproof paper and you literally put the ingredients on it. So it doesn't, there's no like, okay, this one, everything is effectively cooked en papillote, right? So you basically, oh, here's one with fish. You put the piece of fish on the little bit of that paper where the fish goes. And then if you need some new potatoes, you put those in the bit where the new potatoes are. You wrap it all up and you put it in the oven. I would imagine I'd go gas mark 6, probably half an hour.
Got one word for you.
Yeah.
Genius.
Right. Now, I was watching her talking about this book. There's a trailer for this book where she explains it all. And it helps that she has she's got this very endearing demeanor of kind of a slightly dotty aunt who is kind of telling you about ceramic frogs or something. Yeah. She's impossible not to like. She's got this real infectious enthusiasm. But that also, you know, that does slightly play into the madness side of it. But I really felt torn. Looking at this, I was like, this is the kind of thing I can imagine with it was a different sort of personality who was presenting this. If it was someone serious, I might be much more persuaded that this was genuine genius. As it is, I'm genuinely torn. I don't know whether it's genius or madness. Or I can encourage people to look at the video themselves and see what I mean. But anyway, it occurred to me that we've never really talked about this much vaunted, alleged sort of line between genius and madness, which I think it's not even clear what it means, and I'm sure we'll discuss what that means. But the idea being that in some sense, it's a bit like the, you know, people often say that at the extreme ends of the political spectrum, it curves back around on itself and then they converge again. And I think there's some sense in which, you know, what it's trying to do is subvert your mental model that genius is at one end and madness is at the other, and sort of say, aha, but actually, at the ends there is an overlap. Now, I don't know, what does that mean? Is it true? All kinds of questions we probably want to tackle. Yeah.
Is the opposite of genius not just stupidity? Or just like complete...
The fine line between stupidity and genius.
Asininity. Yeah. It's not madness. Madness is like randomness.
Yeah. Well, yeah, is it?
I mean, that's the thing. I feel that I need to introduce some intellectual and analytical rigor to this.
Oh, right? Interesting.
Rigorous. Yeah. Come on, yeah. Rigorous
yeah.
up.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So we need to define some stuff, right? So we need to define what we mean by genius. And madness, but also we also need to talk about, is that peculiar to this, or as Nick sort of saying, is it happening in other areas as well? And indeed, is it this, you know, is a line the right way to see it, as Nick's saying, this sort of continuum, or does it go round? And what I will say at this point, there do seem to be some common... I can see, it feels intuitively why you might get it mixed up, right? Or could be the blur between genius and madness, yeah? And just because both of them, I think, are to do with unusual thinking, with, what's the word I'm looking for?
Unconventional.
Unconventional, there you would go. And there's so yeah.
You can imagine the ignorati yeah. not being able to spot the difference.
Right,
right. So I mean, is there a difference? Right. Could we say that there is a difference, or are they in some sense aspects of the same phenomenon? There's that. Is the output of a genius or a madman distinguishable or hard to distinguish? Is that the idea, like the things that they produce? Mm. And then we've got this question of, is there an overlap in behaviour that means that they are hard to distinguish by their by their sort of epiphenomena, like the crazy Einstein's crazy hair, and the unconventional dress sense and not wearing any shoes and all those kinds of things. So there's several questions there.
So how are we going to navigate our way through this?
Well, why don't we start by trying to take a stab at what we mean?
Yeah.
Because I mean, I don't think, Peter, you might know more about this than me, but I don't think mad is an accepted mental health diagnosis these days.
No.
Is that correct?
It's been unpacked a bit.
Right. So genius is a bit more straightforward, because I think we do have a good handle on that, because IQ does a very good job of measuring, you know, fluid intelligence. So let's just assume that bit is solved, right? What we're talking about is people with very high IQ, 140 plus or whatever. Let's say that that's our genius. But Peter, what where would you go with, like, what is a mad person?
So think of this kind of like the romantic era concept of line between the mad genius,
the right. Beethoven and,
yeah, the Beethovens, know, yeah. And I think what they're getting at is the sort of mental health conditions, probably like schizophrenia, where your mental behaviours and your outward physical behaviours as a result of behaviours are fairly unpredictable, or can be unpredictable, and are different, like very different in many ways to middle of the bell curve people. Possibly anxiety, but possibly not the depressive like conditions. I'm not an expert, but that's what it brings to my mind, is the schizophrenic
or bipolar feels like the kind of thing you would.
Yeah.
Does it help? You know, do you have to be both mad and a genius?
So first of all, I just want to say that I thought there might be some evidence that mental health, mental illness is more common among high intelligence people. Apparently, this is at best disputed.
Right.
So I think we should assume that in terms of, like, is the incidence of mental illness correlated with IQ? I think the answer is no.
I
don't think you're pushing this enough, because I think you just might be talking about just very clever people, right? I mean, maybe we're sort of overusing this word genius, right?
I don't know how else you would...
Well, but what about if you just chose a people... Is there anyone we could
Do you mean like someone who is a great artist but not very good at maths or something?
What I mean is you could define... How do we define genius? It could be, well, let's say... For example, if you won a Nobel Prize, you're a genius.
Are going to all have high IQ, I guarantee.
No, that's what I'm saying. And I don't think that's a good enough definition.
Oh, I see, right.
I think you need a game changer person like Einstein or Isaac Newton.
Famously low IQ individuals like Einstein.
Yeah, no, people. But is there any... Could we name one person from history we could say definitively as a genius?
A genius, but also a Dumbo.
No, look, stop messing this up.
Yes, I can.
Go on.
Okay, well, we all agree on.
I've
got some examples of theories that could have been mad, and in fact were vindicated, right? So obviously they're associated with individuals, so you'll get what you asked for plus more. So how's that?
I mean, I want the
genius
stuff.
Okay, let me run these zany ideas by you. It turns out that contrary to all the experience of every human, the Earth actually goes around the sun. Mad.
Look outside,
Copernicus.
Yeah.
There's the sun going round the Earth. Okay? What about the idea that diseases are caused by tiny animals that are so small you can't see them?
Tishtosh.
Right. And that washing your hands might be useful if you're operating on people. Here's another mad theory. Did you know that the land masses, famously, which are in the same places every time you go there...
They don't move.
They're moving around. They're moving around like lilies on a pond.
I don't know whether we should lock you up or give you a prize.
Did you know that everything is made of tiny particles, some of which aren't even in a particular place?
you would have struggle getting people to believe that.
Stomach ulcers, famously.
Although they do start behaving themselves when you observe them.
Right, apparently, yeah. Apparently they really care about whether we're watching them.
Yes,
Then you've got the... did you know that time goes faster as if you're going... If time goes slower if you're going faster? I mean, these are all totally bonkers theories, right? But so and relative. I think at the time were controversial, most of them. And it took some time for people to discover that they weren't just, you know...
Mad ramblings.
Yeah, mad ramblings. So does that answer your question? Like, what do we mean? Can we come up with some examples of these things? I think those would be... Those are squarely in that space of, like, could... You know, yeah.
So I would say in each of those cases, the you know, this discoverer or the site or whatever of that is, yes, let's call them a genius for a moment. And you could say, well, what makes them mad is, or they might be called mad, is people hearing that information would just go, well, that's just bonkers. Mm. But what I think is more interesting is if we were to look into each of those people, right? And to see if in that, for them to think originally like that, to not think that this stuff is bonkers, is what is it about them that makes them different, right? That they're thinking differently. A lot of it is, you know, the study that they've done behind it, but they have got themselves to a point of originality in the way they think. So would we think hanging out with Copernicus, we'd think he's quite good at sort of telescopes and stuff, and but he's a bit of an odd fellow. Have you seen the way he walks down? Have you seen what he wears? You know, that's why I personally think that's more interesting. Do they also seem odd, mad people in themselves? Or might I take us down the wrong direction?
I think you're touching on something. So although there's not it's disputed if there's a correlation between mental health problems and intelligence, what is better ground for is other not necessarily pathological mental features of people, such as divergent thinking, basically someone who's intelligent is able to think up more novel solutions to problems, aren't so dogmatic in their approach to things. Perhaps like I think there is a link between intelligence and creativity. So, you know, similar to the divergent thinking, but, you know, being able to proffer novel explanations for a given observation.
And sorry to butt in, but this also makes me think, first of all, two things. One, in your examples, they're all in the field of scientific discovery, and we haven't even talked about the musicians, the artists who are famously a bunch of nutcases.
Well, yeah, but I mean, just okay. But let's just throw out a few examples of those then. I mean, yeah. And I think you would. I think that Beethoven is a good example. You know, that I think the late his some of his late music is wouldn't have been out of place 100 years later. You have the kind of revolutionaries of the, you know, the sort of 21st century, you know, the kind of things like Stockhausen and Schoenberg, you know, who are producing things that have never been seen or heard before. Famously, Stravinsky's Rite of Spring, yeah. You know, caused a riot on its debut night. So, you know, because it was so shocking and so different, and those things. Obviously, now we listen to the Rite of Spring and we can't see what all the fuss was all about. So you know, I'm just giving you some examples of that kind of thing.
Yeah, where it's
I mean, certainly the first people to hear the Rite of Spring might have thought that Stravinsky had just rolled a dice and written some random notes on a page. Now I think we have the ability to understand where they're coming from. But I don't think that's terribly different to these scientific examples.
Yeah, you're right. Look, actually, this makes me think of something. I think I've got a little bit of information on this. I've got a little bit of... A perspective on this. Okay?
Is that because the people in the village where you live keep coming around and saying, kill the madman?
Yeah, with
while you're doing those experiments on those corpses.
Yeah. No, look, so something that gets talked about a lot at the moment, and I'm not a huge fan of this sort of context and the vocabulary around it, but is this thing about neurodiversity, right? So bear with me a second. Because what I don't like about the tone of it is if you have ADHD, let's say, is, oh, I'm this beautiful mad weirdo, but I'm, you know, super creative and stuff. And I don't really like that much. And as you two know, I got diagnosed with ADHD, so I feel I'm okay to say
that. You know
where
you're coming from.
But if we think, so at the moment, I'm exposed as an educator to lots of neurodiversity. And what I can see is that those people really genuinely do think in a different way. And I'm seeing it for the first time, not thinking about myself, but others. And I see a lot of it. And they are genuinely coming up with lots of super interesting stuff that, you know, they don't think. It's not typical, as, you know, the vocabulary here is correct, right? The designations are correct. However, I can also see in them that others might find them a little odd, let's say.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Well, I think there is something here. And so it does seem, it does help. And the very thing that makes you, you know, be able to see things in a different way, makes you look odd to others, and also, by the way, can also not also make you a happy person in yourself sometimes. There definitely does seem to be a connection.
I think that is sounds extremely plausible to me. So Peter touched on the fact that I think there are sort of personality differences which are correlated with IQ. Things like openness to experience, for example, mm-hmm. you know, which is, you know, I think quite a good, quite a big predictor. But it seems also completely plausible that at the sort of more tactical level, if you break down what we think intelligence is probably made of, what makes someone intelligent, it's probably a number of things. And if you dial all of those up, or one of them up to, you know, 11, that is going to have, because of the fact that we know these things are correlated, that's going to have some impact on other stuff. So I was just thinking while you were talking, you know, looking for patterns, for example, is something which is associated with intelligence. So being able to spot patterns in information that other people can't see. That obviously related to the ability to discover new things and create new theories and so on. Also probably correlated with spotting lots of things that aren't there, you know. And so you dial that up hard enough, you're going to be seeing a world of patterns that don't actually correlate with anything. I know some people, their analysis of schizophrenia, for example, is just that. It's that patterns are kind of intrusive, you know, that you're seeing patterns everywhere where they don't exist. I'm just using that as an example. It seems plausible to me that would, and you know, and let's take something like well, conscientiousness is plausibly, or being, let's say, hyper motivated to produce things, you know, which is, if you like, the opposite of ADHD. ADHD is like
being
hyper motivated. It's not when you're on medication. But if you imagine like being hyper motivated to go and explore, which I think we've discussed is a kind of way of thinking about, whereas you know, someone like Mozart would, you know, if he was just doing that all the time, would not have been bashing out millions of sonatas, right? Where I'm going with this is same deal, right? Someone who's extremely conscientious and highly motivated, they're going to just be able to produce more. Like so you two take two equally intelligent people, one of whom is super productive. That person is going to end up having a bigger impact.
I think there's misunderstandings there around motivation and how things
I'm just trying to put some flesh on the skeleton that you presented us with.
Are you agreeing with me?
Yeah, saying, look, actually it makes sense when you turn any of these personality, you turn the intelligence, and you know, some aspect of genius, be it, you know, something cognitive, or whether it's something to do more with motivation and productivity and so on, turn any of them up, you're going to get someone who's interestingly different. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, so, especially if they're sort of dialed up artificially in isolation, they're going to be in some way unbalanced.
But also I think we should, you know, draw a distinction, because you're talking about intelligence a lot, and I think that we need to be careful. I don't think it is a continuum, and that you when you get to 96 points something, or even beyond, if we used IQ, for example, I think there's a difference between super intelligent and a genius. I think they're different things.
I'm not sure.
Because I think the difference. Okay. Right, Nick, move us along a bit.
Okay, so we talked about like why there might be correlations in behavior and genius and et cetera, like personality correlations. I think I mentioned earlier that the idea that the outputs might be hard to distinguish. So let's look at the works, if you like.
We need some data, examples
that you've done. And I mentioned things like the Copernican model and the germ theory of disease, etc. But there are a bunch of things which, you know, were thought mad and were, or at least were turned out to be wrong. And so things like, I think Röntgen, having discovered X-rays, then decided that there were these N-rays. And he went very into discovery of N-ray. They don't exist. They were supposed to be a type of... Newton, of course, famously was very into alchemy. Spent a lot of time looking at alchemy. I mean, he wasn't to know it wasn't true, I suppose. I mean, from his point of view, both looked plausible. Then you have things like you've got the Martian canals, of course, which turned out not to be there. The cold fusion, which has been keeps being rediscovered and turns out not to be true. Where I'm going with this is we should expect, in fact, things that are sufficiently advanced in terms of their novelty and the degree to which they demand a new kind of paradigm of the way that we're thinking about things. We should expect it to be difficult to tell if they're true, right? Almost by definition.
Yeah.
And by an analogy, I know we've mentioned this before, but AlphaGo, the Go playing software made AlphaGo. And I think one of the points that people, why is it doing that? We don't know. Why is it making that move? You know, it invented these new kind of moves, as I understand it, which were totally off the kind of path that most players use. And they turn out to be really, really good moves.
Crazy like a fox.
But we have no idea how to evaluate them. Because if we could tell whether they were good moves, we would be clever enough to make them in the first place. IP versus MP. But in fact, in this case, we cannot just look at them and go, that's a good move. We just have to see if it wins.
Yeah.
And I think to some extent, you know, it feels to me like it by definition, sufficiently advanced new ideas or new technologies or anything are going to be hard for us to appraise to begin with. So,
Look, we need to finish things off.
We'll probably have a question, but if we do, Peter, are you able to round us off? Are you or finish us off with something? I don't know.
Yeah. I think it, in summary, for me, I think this concept of madness and genius and the proximity of the two is really just a romantic era kind of story that has perpetuated because it's quite a fun meme. It's playing into its own. We've hugely simplified what is madness and what is genius. So it's a kind of nice little soundbite, really, to me. You get hugely intelligent, very on a sort of 2x2 of neural divergence and genius. You get people all over that space, don't you?
Yeah. So you're saying it's a kind of selection bias thing that we forget. We like to focus on the few people who. Yeah. I mean, take Einstein. You know, famously quite sort of unconventional his appearance, but you see him at Los Alamos and he's with all these other fairly indistinguishable people in suits with side partings wearing ties.
Yeah,
they're all up there in the Einstein exactly, league, yeah. But we don't sort of go, oh, look at these crazy geniuses.
Like you could say Niels Bohr and Einstein, they're quite on a level.
Niels Bohring more like.
Yeah, he was kind of normal, dressed normal. Yeah. So it's like for every Einstein, there's 100 Joe Borings.
Yeah, but I wonder if there's an element. I've definitely got a foot in the Peter camp here. The kind of skepticism about whether this is true. I think there are reasons to think it might be, which we've discussed. But I also think there's a self-serving element as to why we like the myth, and it's that we probably wants to believe that you must pay a price to be a genius. That in some sense, it's sort of a sour grapes effect, really. That, you know, it's comforting to go, on one hand, I wish I'd been born with an IQ of 150. But then, of course, no, because you don't realise that this would come with the price of sort of great mental torment and so on. But so I think there's an element of that behind it as well, sort of telling us this story of, well, you wouldn't really want that anyway. You know, it's not as good as it looks to be a genius because you'd, you know, it would come with the price of insanity. But as Peter says, I think in the vast majority of cases, that just simply isn't true.
Mm. We can examine this. And we can examine this with my question, right? With my let's round it off with this. So this is my question.
Is this us getting the science out of the cupboard now? Isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. This is it. It's time to do some science. Yeah, interesting. On this.
Do some science.
So, if you think it's rubbish, tell me. I'm sitting here thinking, you know, have I ever met a genius? Right? But that's difficult to answer. So
every time you look in the mirror.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, well, look, can I think of times in my life when either in a one-off or repeated, I felt that I'm with someone, wow, this person is the most intelligent. I feel I'm with someone special here, something a little bit different level. And I can think of maybe one or two situations where I really felt like that. And then what I'm doing is going, so what was that person like? Were they a bit odd? You know, were they a bit different? And so I want to ask each of us that. Do you think it's a good question?
Well, yeah, but of course we have to assume, in order for you to tell that you're with someone who's on the next level up, there must have been some visible indicator which might mean that it's correlated with unusual behavior. That's all I'm saying. Like, so in other words, you might well have had a conversation with someone who was, you know, a massive genius, but they just behaved normally. They were just talking down to you.
Well, no, I guess what I'm trying to say is that, and that's why I don't want to use the word genius. And although earlier I said, let's not necessarily confuse intelligence with...
cognitively impressive.
Yeah, right. That's what I mean. And so I can think of probably someone who I worked with when I was an analyst, going back about 16 years or so ago now. And they were just phenomenally intelligent, it seemed to me. And how did that demonstrate? How did that manifest? Well, they wrote really well. They spoke in a really articulate way. But most of all, probably, the way that their thoughts, their processes, were just blew my mind. How did you get from here to there like that? And just really original. Maybe these are things that I value and think of as intelligence, right? But they just blew me away, right? And around them, I felt I felt very, very ordinary, yeah? And actually, I'm going to put it in another way. I was going to say, but they seemed totally mad, and they did. But as someone else there, when I worked there, put it like this. They said, the thing about X is that he's so intelligent, he doesn't know how to be with himself. And there was a lot of truth in... But I think he'd put it on... He'd sort of defined it quite well, actually.
Right.
So that kind of means... So for me, that sort of seems, genius equals mad equals a genius. That was... Anyway, so what do you guys think?
Well, I don't know. I'm thinking of the really... sort of impressive people. And one particular is, you know, all the those people are probably fairly far between. But they've all been pretty normal in my experience, actually. So we met Anders Sandberg, who's a philosopher, incredibly well-read.
You couldn't not notice that he was a brain box.
You couldn't not notice that he was a brain box. But he's incredibly sort of normal.
Nice and normal.
And very interesting and very engaging. You know, there's no sort of sense of superiority about him. He loves to talk and explore new ideas and do it with anybody. Likewise, Nick Bostrom. He's a bit of a brain box too.
No one would doubt that.
He's
can't be classed as witless.
He comes across as pretty normal.
I think there is what perhaps it is difficult to tell with someone. So I'm thinking of I'm not going to name names, but people that I've met where I think there is an abruptness to the, and you were alluding to this, a kind of abruptness to the jumps that they make, really, to go from one thing to another. They're traversing on a path that you can't quite keep up with, or if you're lucky, you can follow it, but there's no way you would have got there yourself, kind of thing. And I wonder if that could just very well look like a random walk, you know? Like if you imagine just letting them be a little bit faster to make a jump that's a little bit further. You know, from your perspective, there is no connection between this thing we're talking about now and the thing we're just talking about a minute ago. So, you know, it occurs to me that is a plausible reason why you might think this person's off their rocker, because you simply can't follow the trail. But the other thing I think I would say is a commonality, is a kind of a disregard for the things that other people care about. Like they're really, really motivated to know stuff about things.
Yeah.
And they don't really care what clothes you're wearing or what they're wearing or, you know, what your hair looks like. And it's not because they're being kind of, you know...
It's not affectation.
No, it is like they just don't... The way I put it is they realise that doesn't matter, but
also sort of conceptually, they're not bogged down by any particular dogma or...
Mm.
Everything's
questionable.
Everything's questionable.
It's all up for debate.
Yeah, it's... yeah, so they're not pre-programmed with particular bias. Like they're... If you've got a different opinion, no matter how weird, like normal, like to the average Joe, that weirdness is, they're keen to explore it and understand why you have that opinion, because that helps them update their model.
I think Nature, wasn't it, who said that the dancers were thought mad by those who could not hear the music.
Nice. Okay, I think we'll stop there. Yeah, I very much enjoyed that. All right, well, thank you, as always, for listening to the Cognitive Engineering Podcast. I'm Fraser McGrew, being here with Nick Hare and Peter Coghill of Aleph. Until next time, goodbye.